Welcome to the Blue Security Podcast, a weekly podcast for information security defenders, where we bring you discussions on best practices, tools, and implementation for enterprise security. Now, here are your hosts for today's show, Andy Jha and Adam Brewer.
Welcome to another episode of the Blue Security Podcast. I'm Andy, your host.
I'm Adam, your co-host.
This week, we have a couple of news items to talk about. The first one I wanted to mention is Cloudflare and Okta. And this is kind of the gift that keeps on giving, because Cloudflare disclosed on February 1st that its internal Atlassian servers were breached by a suspected nation-state attacker who accessed their Confluence Wiki, their Jira bug database, and their Bitbucket source code management system. So their source code was actually compromised. To access the systems, the attackers used an access token and three service account credentials that were stolen during the previous compromise linked to Okta's data breach from October 2023, where Cloudflare failed to rotate one of thousands that were leaked during the Okta compromise.
Wait, before you go any further, this is what we talk about with the asymmetrical nature of cybersecurity, in the sense that attackers have essentially unlimited time to try attacks. And Andy, you're going to get to some numbers of all the systems they rebooted and rotated and everything else. And the attackers literally found the needle in the haystack of the one you didn't rotate, the one you didn't catch. And because they have that asymmetric advantage where they have nothing but time to keep trying stuff, to keep looking for weaknesses, to find the porthole on the Death Star, they're able to find it and get in. And that is the profound challenge of our time, is that we have this asymmetrical disadvantage where defenders, we only have so much time in a day. You know, we have a 9-to-5 job. We're hopefully getting a break on nights and weekends, although I know for many of our listeners, it's not always the case. But attackers are trying at all times to find those weaknesses, to knock down your walls, to break in. And I mean, that's just wild. They found that one access token that was still valid, not rotated, needle in the haystack, and used it to wedge their way in. Incredible. Mm-hmm.
Cloudflare detected malicious activity on November 23rd, and this was back in 2023. And they severed the cyber criminal, the attacker's access in the morning of November 24th. So fairly quick response after detection. And then their cybersecurity forensic specialist began investigating the incident 3 days later on October 26th. If you remember, Cloudflare was actually the first to notify Okta of possible breach to Okta's system, because when they started investigating this, they realized that it was linked to their Okta credentials. And then they notified Okta. Okta themselves didn't detect their breach. It was actually Cloudflare that first notified them. So good on Cloudflare's at least detection. And then I think they did a pretty good job in response.
Before you go on, just one more note too. Those dates, I just pulled out my phone to check those dates because they triggered in my head of, I wonder if that was Thanksgiving. And it was. So November 23rd, the date they detected it was literally Thanksgiving Day, which in the United States is a national holiday. Nobody works. The morning of November 24th is what we call Black Friday here in the United States. Also a day very few people work. Generally, most businesses are closed. And you said they began investigating the incident 3 days later on November 26th. That's a Sunday on a holiday weekend. So these attackers very intentionally broke in on a national holiday when there would be the least amount of detection and eyes on systems, just to maximize their chance of success. And to be honest, evilness, because you are taking people away from their families to now go defend it. And not to get on like big soapbox here about just how attackers do not care. They don't care if it's a holiday. They don't care if it's a night. They don't care about that asymmetric advantage they have. They're going to keep trying to find ways. And this is maybe one of the most depressing and kind of hard to swallow parts of our business and our industry, is that we are defending attacks all times of the day, even on holidays, weekends, Sundays, whatever. Cloudflare, Andy, we were talking about in the pre-show, has a checkered history in some ways, but still people were taken away from their families to have to go defend against this attack. And definitely feel for them and all folks listening to our show who have had to give up time with their families to go solve for something that had happened. That sucks. I hate that that happens. I'm disappointed to see that. So anyhow, on with the show.
Yeah, regardless of how we feel about the company, which, like you said, has a checkered past, these were people that incident responders. So I think we pour one out for them.
Yes.
While they had to give up their holidays to obviously respond to this incident. And they continued to respond to the incident and investigate it for a few months. I think they just finished their investigation and then released this report. But as part of their remediation, the Cloudflare staff rotated all production credentials, which are over 5,000 unique ones. They also physically segmented test and staging systems, performed forensic triage on 4,800, almost 4,900 systems, re-imaged and rebooted all systems on the company global network, including Atlassian servers, Jira, Confluence, Bitbucket, and machines accessed by the attacker. I want that to just sink in for a moment for anyone who's in IT, anyone who's in cybersecurity. Re-imaging and rebooted all systems on the company's global network. That is a monumental effort, and certainly is not cheap when it comes to either just dollars spent on incident response or in time lost, in employee overtime, you know, mental health, all of that. I mean, that was in a couple of months to do that. If you were to ask your company right now, if you had to do that, re-image and reboot all systems on your company's global network, including servers. I mean, that I can't even imagine what type of effort, you know, 24/7 type of operation in order to do that in a couple of months is pretty daunting, if you ask me.
The incident responders were not the only ones working nights and weekends after that to accomplish that feat. And also point out, end of the year is usually time companies like to go into change freeze and really limit changes and keep things operational. And instead, they're going through a massive, massive effort in December and January. That's, again, incredible.
Yeah. So I just wanted to talk about this because I thought, number one, it's that needle in a haystack that you talked about, Adam. And then two, just the amount of effort that it takes in one of these type of attacks. And that's something that, as defenders, we need to think about. Also have a game plan as part of the IT organization of what happens if we would need to do that, right? What's the risk? And then what does your remediation look like? How long would it take you to do something like this? And they did it in a couple of months, which I honestly think is pretty impressive.
Very.
So the next thing I wanted to talk about is the Intune suite and a couple of things that went generally available this week, February 1st, actually. So three parts that were announced during Ignite, which Adam and I touched on during our Ignite show, but I want to highlight now, is Enterprise Application Management, Advanced Analytics, and Cloud PKI are all now generally available as part of the Intune suite. And correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, I believe you can purchase each one of these things separately, but if you already own Intune suite, they're just included.
Both statements are correct. So all of these solutions are now available as standalone. So if you say, I just want Cloud PKI, sell that to me, you can go to your Microsoft account team and they can certainly do that for you. I forget exactly where the tipping over point is, where if you want, you know, two solutions, three solutions, where it makes more sense to go to the suite. I believe it's closer to three or more. But again, your account team can run the numbers and figure out the best value for you. But you're right. Anybody who already owned Intune Suite, these just lit up automatically and they got additional value from it. When we first announced Intune Suite, and I should take a step back and mention, Andy and I both work for Microsoft in our security sales business in the field. When we first announced this, we promised that there would be future value coming to this suite, especially for customers who are early adopters. And this is the realization of that value. These things we promised would come have now happened and are now generally available. So definitely kept good on our promise to bring more value to Intune Suite, and they're now available.
Right. And that includes things like remote help, endpoint privilege management, which is that just-in-time elevation of a specific application or service rather than providing local administrator to a user. You can provide privileged access to a specific executable or application. There's remote help.
You already said that.
Oh, did I say that already?
You said remote help, but you were about to explain it. Sorry.
Yeah. Remote help being kind of the team viewer or log me in replacement. So, and you can place conditional access rules as part of your Entra suite to access. So for example, if you want to make sure that a computer isn't compromised before a administrator logs in using remote help, you can do that. And then also things like Microsoft Tunnel for mobile application management, which I think is a niche thing, but for companies that need remote access on an application basis where you don't want a full tunnel, you get just the tunnel for the application itself. Very, very helpful. And also when you're using MAM, you don't have to manage the entire device. So that's also a benefit where you can provide an application, not have to manage the device, just do the application with the tunnel on the back end. So let's talk about real quick these three things that went GA. The enterprise application management, that provides a secure enterprise application catalog, which will help administrators simplify discovering, packaging, deploying, and updating first and third-party applications on devices. It makes it a lot easier for enterprises to mitigate security risks from vulnerabilities that can arise from outdated apps. You no longer have to package an app. So if you were an Intune administrator, you probably know the pains of having to package an application, an MSI or an XE, and then upload it to the portal and then deploy it. I mean, from the early Intune days, they didn't even have versioning back then. So, you know, you talk about parity with SCCM and being able to deploy different versions of an application. You weren't able to do that. You had to either deploy a brand new application or rewrite the existing one. Now you have a catalog, and I don't remember the exact number, but I believe it's like 80 plus applications now going GA. And of course, they're going to continue to add, where you want to deploy 7-Zip, you want to deploy WinRAR, you want to deploy VLC or something like that, you just click on the application and tell it where you want it to deploy, either a device group or user group or whatever. And it even has the install flags. So if you're familiar with, you know, the slash install, slash quiet, you know, no uninstall, blah, 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 so on and so forth. Those install flags, those are all built in for you. So you don't need to do that either. And there's different versions. You want to deploy the 1.3 version? Okay. You want to deploy the 1.4 version? Go ahead. All those versions are built in. So point and click, application catalog, very easy for administrators to now deploy third-party apps.
Yeah, this is awesome. And this is one of those things when you look at conceptually how we used to do it forever in IT, and you think of how at every IT shop across the world, you had kind of your SCCM guy or gal, or your app guy or gal. And that was their job, as they sat there and packaged stuff all day and then packaged updates. And if you think of how much wasted effort that was, because the process is essentially the same, especially for popular free and open source software, Andy, you just named several of them, as well as commonly used commercial software, that's all the same. And why did we have to go through a trial and error process with each person's app packaging guy or gal at thousands of enterprises, hundreds of thousands of enterprises across the globe, instead of figuring it out once and just having everyone leverage that same work? That's what this finally is. Like, in terms of efficiency gains and consolidating effort and not duplicating effort, this was one of those things that still every IT shop was duplicating effort, and the knowledge sharing was limited, and just the ability to replicate this. And I know there have been package managers, Winget now is a thing, and Chocolaty and all that, but this is just enterprise grade, built in, right in your endpoint management platform, ready to go. And again, the value of updates, the updates are going to be baked in automatically. You don't have to worry about it a whole lot, or you can see what apps do need updates and get them updated. And so this is, you know, we throw around the word game changer a lot, and maybe not like game changer in terms of just revolution, but in terms of just simplicity, deduplication of effort, solving something that is a major security risk in having outdated unpatched software on your client PCs, this solves and checks a lot of boxes. And one thing I'll mention too, the Intune team has recently made a very big push to really get great at macOS management. I have seen this firsthand where I've had the product group, they want to take calls with customers. They're asking customers straight up, like, what are we missing that's preventing you from just using Intune to manage all your Macs? Why do you need anybody else at this point? And they have invested a ton in macOS management. And one of the things they've called out for all these solutions in Intune suite is they're going to ship on macOS day one, like Cloud PKI, which we'll talk about in a moment, or they absolutely plan to bring all of this capability to the macOS side. So this enterprise app management today, to be clear, is a Windows thing. However, there is full plans for equivalent capability. I don't want to say parity because that means something different, but equivalent functionality on macOS in the coming months and you know, days to come. So more to come there, but certainly Intune has really become strategically where they want to be first class on Windows and macOS and have equivalent functionality as much as possible to where it is a first class management platform for both of those desktop class operating systems. So just know that that is still to come.
Great call out there. Cloud PKI, as you mentioned, is a cloud-based solution that allows organizations to manage certificates for their devices without having to require any on-premise infrastructure, which is huge.
Huge.
I think to deploy a greenfield PKI infrastructure can take organizations somewhere like a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And with this, it's all just as a service, essentially. So Microsoft is managing the backend infrastructure, and all you have to do is point and click on what certificates you want to deploy. And it's all, of course, based within the Intune Admin Center. And so you can deploy automatically certificates for authentication, VPN, Wi-Fi, and you can do that alongside your current Active Directory certificate services if you want to manage that for SSL and TLS. And you can revoke, issue, or renew certificates right from the Intune Admin Center. So pretty big, I think, for someone like myself where I've never had to deploy a greenfield PKI, and I also hate working with certificates. Having it as a service is huge. I would definitely take advantage of something like this.
This is something customers have been asking for. I've had customers ask me for years, like, is there just some sort of PaaS or SaaS solution for certificates? We don't want to stand all this up. We don't have it today. It feels like it doesn't make sense to stand this up today in 2024. We want something cloud native, easy to manage. And the answer has been, no, we don't have anything. Go stand up ADCS on-prem, or at least set it up in a VM in Azure, but still you got to do all the care and feeding yourself. It's IaaS. Like, that's not a great answer. And for this to be now available as a SaaS solution is incredible. And again, just kind of like the last one where app management, really it's app packaging as a service, you know, PKI as a service is something that has been a huge pain point for all the customers I've talked to that want to do modern device management in a lot of ways, because there's still things that need certificates to really function correctly or to really work seamlessly. And so to deliver this, very, very valuable. So I think between the first two things we've talked about, we really have the opportunity to reduce complexity, save a lot of time for your endpoint folks who are managing your devices.
And the final one that went GA as part of this is the advanced analytics. And that provides IT administrators with real-time insights about their devices and applications. You can proactively detect and troubleshoot to stay ahead of your problems. Things like anomaly detection, application crashes and hangups, how long it takes for your device to boot into the operating system, stuff like that. And you can monitor things like your battery health, so that you can prioritize hardware updates within your fleet. You can also query a device directly, like a single device if you wanted to do. Obviously, it has the analytics. But for those who have been around, I think this is an evolution of what we had before, which was Windows Analytics. That was way back in the day. And especially when people were trying to update to Windows 10, back when I was a modern desktop TSP with Microsoft and I had to explain the Windows Analytics side, and then it went away. This is the evolution of it that is in the cloud. It's Intune native. It works exactly, you know, how it's expected with Intune. So anything that's onboarded with Intune, as long as you have this solution, either the Intune suite or, you know, buying it separately, you can now have all the analytics you want as part of your device management.
It has always surprised me how much organizations fail to prioritize the endpoint experience, because that is the primary conduit through which your employees experience your company. They pull out their PC every day, and if that experience is great, they're happy with the company. If it stinks, they're disappointed, and it creates negative ill will toward the company. It really does. You know, companies invest so much in having beautiful grounds. My former employers both had beautifully manicured grass, just some of the most beautiful grass and landscaping in the entire city. They had beautiful buildings, campuses with all sorts of amenities and features. And these are all around the employee experience. It's a nice place to work. It makes you like going to work more. It makes you want to work harder for the company because they're giving you this nice place to spend your time. And then they will issue these 8-pound bricks of plastic that take a million years to boot, have blue screens, crash all the time, conflicting agents, and like nobody cares. And that's the thing people are actually spending 8 hours interacting with. Not the little Starbucks kiosk down by the cafeteria. Not the cafeteria where they eat lunch in 2 days a week. Not the fitness center they use occasionally. They are looking at this 8 hours a day. And for whatever reason, companies like don't get that is so fundamental to the employee experience. So I am a huge on my soapbox believer that these analytics tools are not just a nice to have, they are a need to have. They are critical. Brad Anderson, when he was at Microsoft, now at Qualtrics, used to talk about this all the time, that delivering a great user experience, minimizing blue screens, speeding up the time to boot, the time to productivity, has value for the company. And I think we've gotten away from talking about that a little bit with Brad's departure, but I still strongly believe in this. And it's darn near my hill to die on. It's like companies really need to spend more time. So these advanced analytics, having this information of what is causing application hangs, what is your time to boot, what are your devices that are having poor battery health and your users are having a poor mobility experience? These are all things you can correct and then really improve employee satisfaction end to end. Because again, it's one of the most visceral, in your face, day in, day out touch points you have with your people. So I love this stuff and I highly encourage you to try it out, get a trial if you need to, but start working with your endpoint management team, because I get a lot of our listeners aren't directly engaged with that, but doing your part to help deliver a better experience. And the way security can really impact that, my number one thing is limit agents on your devices. Instead of multiple agents, find ways you can consolidate and simplify. So off my soapbox on that, but definitely love the analytics piece in particular and definitely see and feel strongly about the value contained within it.
The final thing that I wanted to talk about is a new feature within the iPhone that was recently released. And I think because specifically for the United States, where the iPhone is just so prevalent, it's one of the most popular devices, it gets stolen a lot. And so oftentimes you have your iPhone in your pocket or something like that and it gets stolen. We talked about a few months ago, one of the things that I have implemented, which is preventing a change to my iCloud password, or just changing the iPhone passcode in general. But if I prevent an iCloud password change, if my phone gets stolen, the user or the attacker, the person stealing the phone wouldn't be able to change my iCloud just based on my phone, which is a problem. And it has been done where people have been locked out of their iCloud account because their phone has been stolen, because the attacker has changed the password. Another thing attackers are doing, muggers, you know, people who are stealing your phone like off the street, they sometimes demand the passcode, where they take your phone and they demand the passcode so that they can get in. I would say this protection here is great because you can give them the passcode. If they take the passcode, they won't really be able to do anything. So with this new feature, it's called Stolen Device Protection. Some of the features and actions have additional security requirements when the phone is away from a familiar location such as home or work. And so these requirements prevent someone who has stolen your device and knows your passcode from making critical changes to your account or your device. So for example, if I am away from my home and I have this enabled and I give you my passcode, when you try to change specific security features, it will actually require face ID or touch ID biometric authentication, which means that I have to be there. If you take the phone away from me and you know my passcode, you still won't be able to change certain security things like the passcode or my iCloud password. There's no passcode alternative to fall back on, so only the biometrics will be able to unlock it.
And to be clear, that's a change. And if you're listening, you're saying, well, that's not the way it works. Well, if you don't have this turned on, then yes, some things allow passcode failback where it's like, oh, I couldn't read your face, put in your passcode. When you turn this on, it stops that. It's either your face or your face. There is no fallback.
Correct. And there's also something called a security delay. So some actions such as changing your Apple ID password will also require you to wait an hour, then perform a second face ID or touch ID authentication. So pretty significant changes here, I think. Whether or not you need them, you know, these are things that I think should be enabled just in case. Because think about it, if you're in a life death situation, someone's pointing a gun at you, they demand your iPhone and they want your passcode, just give them the passcode, right? You don't need to worry about it because they get into your phone, maybe they'll access a few things, but if they try to change actual security features like your iCloud password, which is what matters, you know, if you follow what I do, which is don't allow anything, you have to have the screen time pin, which is a different pin than the passcode. They wouldn't be able to do it anyways. But if you don't want to go through all that trouble, you just enable this feature. It's built in. And now they actually have to have you, which, you know, if they really knew, they would have to kidnap you, which is a whole nother issue, right? But in this case, there's a security delay. So they have to wait an hour. And they also have to have your face or your touch ID in order to authenticate to change this stuff. So I think this is a really good thing. Definitely enable it. I hope Android comes out with something similar in parity to this as well.
The big driver for this was that with your device passcode and your device, so arguably two factors, I know my device passcode and I have physical possession of my device, Apple would allow you to use those two things to change your Apple ID password. Now, what's critical about that is when you go try to disable Find My iPhone, which is tied to activation lock. That's what these attackers actually care about. These muggers or thieves care about, because they want activation lock off so they can wipe the phone and sell it. With activation lock on, it can't be they can sell it, but you can't use it because it won't reactivate. It can't be reused. And so that's the deterrent here is you're, again, activation lock came out and it did work. It stopped or lowered thefts significantly. And now activation lock has become so prevalent that thieves have discovered that the workaround is steal your phone, then demand your passcode under duress. This now breaks that. Now, you noticed, Andy, there's that security delay where you have to do the face ID two times. That even prevents the attacker from going, here, look at your phone. So it gets the face ID once. They're going to need it again in an hour. So unless they're going to hold you hostage for an hour, which is an entirely different class of crime from a common thief, which they don't want to do, it's going to prevent that. And it basically cuts off that entire mechanism, because now I can't change your Apple ID password, which means I can't disable activation lock, which means I can't really resell the phone other than for parts, because it is not functional. It won't be usable in any sense. So that is the real benefit here, is delivering all of that. And then the other thing, just to add on, is I don't see any downside to doing this. It's not on by default for some reason, which I was disappointed with, because I honestly think it should. For a legitimate user of the phone, this creates almost zero burden on you. And so I just, for all of our listeners, you should turn on stolen device protection, and you should talk to your family and encourage them to all turn it on as well. There's really no downside to doing so. So strongly recommend it. Apple really did a nice job here. What prompted this in the first place, by the way, hat tip to, I believe it was Joanna Stern at the Wall Street Journal, who highlighted this theft technique and the essentially kind of loophole that the thieves were exploiting. And because of Joanna's stellar reporting, and she's a great tech journalist over at the Wall Street Journal, Apple literally developed and shipped this feature. So that's journalism doing good for our world, is exposing these risks and then working with companies like Apple to basically de-risk the environment.
Yeah, great stuff here. Thanks for the history behind it and explaining the attack vector. That is a great call out. So go in and enable this. That's our show for this week. Thanks for watching and listening as always. Our contact information will be in the show notes, as well as the links to the topics that we talked about. If you have any questions or topics you want us to talk about in the future, definitely reach out to us. Thanks. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the Blue Security Podcast. Please check out the show notes, catch up on episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Find Andy on Twitter at AJawZero and Adam at AJBrewer. See you at our next episode.